February 19, 1942, President Franklin D. Roosevelt issued Executive Order 9066, permitting areas in the United States to be prescribed as military zones. In the weeks that followed, over 100,000 Japanese Americans were forcibly removed to and incarcerated in internment camps across the country. At the same time, the extensive migration of African Americans from the South to northern and western cities, such as Los Angeles, as part of the Great Migration was taking place. The wave of migrants during this time was mainly motivated by the issue of Executive Order 8802 in June of 1941, which prohibited racial discrimination in the defense industry. In search of job opportunities and seeking a life away from the racial segregation and Jim Crow laws of the South. I'm Wendy Zhou, and today I wanted to focus on a little-known event which occurred around the end of the war and the half-decade immediately after it. Because of LA housing restrictions on where African Americans can reside, many migrants, most of them, according to Scott Kurashige, from Texas or Louisiana, settle in the recently evacuated district of Little Tokyo. According to Josh Sides, the population in this district increased to around 70,000 from the 8,000 immediately before Japanese internment. This was so that in October of 1943, black businessman Leonard Christmas declared that Little Tokyo had ceased to exist and had been replaced by an African-American district, which he called Bronzeville. Christmas was one of the founding members of the Bronzeville Chamber of Commerce, which in November started distributing placards to local businesses stating, "This is Bronzeville. Watch us grow." December 17, 1944. Public Proclamation No. 21 has just been issued, granting Japanese-American internees permission to return to their former places of residence. Many, including both blacks and whites, were concerned about what would happen when the Japanese Americans returned to Little Tokyo, considering its demographic transition to the predominantly African American Bronzeville. They thought it likely that racial conflict would occur, exacerbated by the housing shortage and overcrowding. Many black residents of Bronzeville were concerned that they would be driven out and deprived of the opportunities they had during their stay, and of which they had formerly been deprived of during the era of Jim Crow. Writing for the Baltimore Afro-American in August of 1945, a prominent African-American newspaper, Irene West quotes a black businessman in Bronzeville saying that he and some others have heard a rumor that, quote, "a movement is on foot to force colored people to return to the South," unquote. Upon asking him, quote, "How do these colored people from the Deep South feel about that prospect?" unquote, the businessman answered, quote, "Why, they say they just won't go back to the South, or Texas, or even Oklahoma. They never again want to see the South after a taste of this work, money, and freedom. It's heaven to what most of them have ever known," unquote. Relations between Japanese and African Americans is the theme of my podcast, and although in the half decade or so following the end of Japanese internment, race relations in the Little Tokyo Bronzeville district were not as perfect as contemporary news sources claimed, as overcrowding, poverty, and crime did contribute to heightened racial ethnic tensions. Relations were relatively free from any serious conflict, mainly due to the actions of multicultural community organizations that actively worked to challenge misconceptions these two groups held about the other. One thing to keep in mind is that some of the primary sources I'll discuss use terms for the groups of people I'm talking about, which are considered offensive today. I've decided to read them in their original form, while maintaining a critical distance between my narration and the primary sources. Although black migrants did find more job opportunities in LA, life in the Little Tokyo Bronzeville district was generally characterized by overcrowding and squalor. Psychologist Dorothy Baruch, writing for The Nation, describes the living circumstances of many black migrants residing in the district and how, quote, "in place after place, children lived in windowless rooms amid peeling plaster, rats, and flies. Ordinarily, there was no bathtub, never more than a single washbowl or lavatory. Sometimes as many as 40 people shared one toilet." Although Baruch portrays the district as characterized by squalor, it is important to note that as a white person who was not a resident of Little Tokyo Bronzeville, her rhetoric may reflect the racist views held by most white Americans at the time regarding ethnic neighborhoods. The general shabbiness was what most returning Japanese Americans had to face upon their first arrival in Little Tokyo Bronzeville, as well as their shock at the sheer number of African Americans residing in the area. Mary Suzuki Ichino, a second-generation, or Nisei, Japanese-American who was born in 1924, describes her first glimpse of Little Tokyo Bronzeville after her return from the Manzanar War Relocation Center, where she had been removed during the war. Her account describes both the overcrowding and what she perceived as the general shabbiness of the district, as well as a demographic shift. It was so devastating. It was just so run down, so dirty. And I said, "This is Little Tokyo?" And she says, "No, it's called Brownsville." Well, I said, "Well, it sure looks it, you know. There were laundries hanging out, people sitting out in the window. It was basically a black neighborhood now. It was no longer Asian." Most Japanese in LA lived in overcrowded hotels in both Little Tokyo, Brownsville, and the neighboring Skid Row during this time, including the actor George Takei. Archie Miyatake, also born in 1924 and who returned to Little Tokyo, Brownsville after the war, recalls, quote, "Hotel hallways packed with children who played beneath clotheslines crisscrossing above them," unquote. The overcrowded environment quickly sparked racial tensions among Japanese and African Americans competing for housing and cultural space. Hisaya Yamamoto, a columnist for the Los Angeles Tribune, an African American newspaper primarily focusing on issues of race, describes an experience her Japanese American friend Chester had where he was complimented by a black coworker for not being, quote, "like a Japanese at all," unquote. This was because Chester was willing to sit with African Americans during work breaks instead of acting condescending toward them and leaving them out while instead seeking a better relationship with whites, like most Japanese Americans at that time. Nevertheless, a plethora of news articles gestured to racial harmony among these two groups. Irene West, writing in August 1946 under the heading "Whites Disappoint," claims that, quote, "The white citizenry here had predicted shootings, knifings, and revolution. Instead, they find only quiet cooperation and race harmony. What a disappointment to white onlookers," unquote. In addition, J. Robert Smith of the San Bernardino Sun claims in February 1948, though falsely, that since the Japanese return, there has not been a single case of violence, a single disturbance between the two minorities, unquote. There had emerged, however, two significant events prior to the article that have challenged this assumption of mutual goodwill. A January 1945 lawsuit filed by the African American Providence Baptist Church against the newly restarted Hampa Hongwanji Buddhist Temple over concerns about eviction, and a well-documented conflict over the hiring of two Nisei GIs in response to increased crime in the local area, which I will discuss shortly. According to Scott Kurushige, these articles aiming to portray racial harmony between Japanese and African Americans were not the most reliable, since a lot of them served the purpose of propaganda to encourage racial harmony by seemingly documenting it. However, these articles were evidence of widespread support for greater racial harmony from prominent African-American newspapers, many of which were run by local community activists, which aimed to challenge the misconception among many of their readers that the Japanese-Americans were intending to drive them out of Little Tokyo, Brownsville, or otherwise deprive them of opportunities. On the other hand, even though journalist Togo Tanaka criticized the Japanese at the time, who blindly referred to criminals as quote-unquote Negro, and reiterated the fact that crime is always high in overcrowded and slum-like areas such as Little Tokyo, Brownsville, many Japanese Americans seemed to have absorbed white people's perception at the time of African Americans as shiftless and even criminal. Mitsuhiko H. Shimizu, a longtime first-generation Japanese business owner, describes how, quote, "Blacks, Chicanos, and other ethnic groups had moved into Japanese town, and it was dangerous during the evenings. We asked the police to do something about the burglars, but they said they were busy. Then we said that we were going to hire night watchmen and ask the police to permit them to carry pistols. We hired two Japanese night watchmen and ran our businesses." Shimizu refers to the well-documented conflict over the hiring of two armed Nisei veterans in response to the robbery of an elderly Japanese-American couple by an alleged black assailant, an event which was charged with racial stereotyping, but which also saw multicultural community organizations actively seek out cross-cultural understanding. Starting as early as fall of 1945, many black businessmen complained about the, quote, "crime and vice conditions inherent in Little Tokyo, Brownsville," but racial tensions were introduced as Japanese Americans began to take over businesses they had run before internment. 42 robberies, mostly targeting aging first-generation Japanese, were recorded in 3 weeks during the spring of 1947. The Japanese Businessmen's Association hired two Nisei veterans to patrol the streets after dark. a move which sparked protests from black residents, seeing it as vigilantism aiming to, quote, to force the Negroes out of Little Tokyo, unquote. According to various news accounts, community representatives settled their differences in a meeting in February of 1947, sponsored by the Council for Civic Unity, a multicultural organization formed by LA Mayor Fletcher Bowron to promote racial harmony. At the meeting, Reverend Harold M. Kingsley, an African-American congregational minister and activist, asserted that blacks had not attempted to prevent Japanese Americans from returning, but instead welcoming them, and that they should not return this kindness with this measure involving racist stereotyping against African-Americans, and which many of them thought was a prelude to forcible evacuation. In the end, lawyer Kenji Ito, speaking for the local Japanese-American community, made a forceful statement that referenced their experience of internment. Quote, Japanese don't believe in evacuation, unquote. The meeting garnered widespread press coverage, and no similar incidents of one group threatening to deprive the other of power or dignity were repeated. Harold Kingsley was also the head of Pilgrim House, a community center originally founded in 1943 to meet emergency problems of housing and childcare during the Bronzeville period. He was referencing how in 1945, Pilgrim House started a project called the Common Ground Committee, initially to help promote a welcoming atmosphere for Japanese Americans returning to the local area. Later, the organization hired second-generation Japanese American Sam Ishikawa to serve on the Common Ground Committee, as well as to engage in outreach to the local Japanese American community. From 1945 to the end of the decade, the group organized multiple events and gatherings meant to encourage mutual understanding between African Americans, Japanese Americans, and those of other ethnic groups living in the nearby area. It was largely in part due to the efforts of Pilgrim House, the Council for Civic Unity, multicultural newspapers, and many other individuals that relations between these two groups were free from any serious conflict during the Little Tokyo Bronzeville period immediately following World War II, despite persistent problems of overcrowding, crime, and misconceptions based on race. Afterward, during the 50s and 60s, second-generation Japanese Americans were among the first to integrate formerly white-only suburban neighborhoods in LA, while Black and Latino residents received significantly less welcome from whites, due largely, according to Scott Kurashige, to racial prejudice and the large populations of the latter groups sparking white fears of a quote-unquote invasion. However, the era of Little Bronze Tokyo, as it came to be called, is still commemorated and appreciated today. In fact, the award-winning 2009 play Bronzeville, written by Tim Toyama and Aaron Woolfolk and produced by the Roby Theater Company, runs from the spring of 1942 to the spring of 1945 and features an African-American family from Mississippi that moves to Los Angeles and struggles to both protect themselves and uphold their values when they find a Japanese-American man hiding in the attic. I'm Wendy Zhao. Thank you for listening.